Next Saturday night in the Cork Opera House, Gravenchor T.G. Cahir will be presented to the piper Paddy Keenan at a gala concert, which will feature some absolutely great musicians, and it's going to be a wonderful night of music. And to celebrate the fact that Paddy is being presented with this award next weekend, I met up with him a couple of weeks ago to talk a little bit about his music and about what he has been doing musically over the past number of years since the days of the Bossy Band and what his plans are for the future. First of all, though, let's hear a couple of tunes from Paddy. Jigs, Sleeve Russell, The Blarney Pilgrim and The Clare Jig.
Thank you.
Russell, The Blarney Pilgrim and The Clare Jig from Paddy Keenan from his and Tommy O'Sullivan's recently released album, The Long Grazing Acre. Well, when I met up with Paddy a couple of weeks ago, the first question I asked him was what it meant to him to win this award.
It means a lot. It means a whole lot. I was surprised actually to hear about it. I got a phone call from Mary about a couple of months back, and I was over in New Hampshire where I live, and I didn't know what to think. It was just, I heard it and I thought, wow. And then it went away for a while, and then when it came back, I started to feel kind of scared of it, because I'm not really all that good at placed in front of TV cameras and stuff like that and the media. I'm not really all that great at that. I've never been. I thought about it afterwards, and I spoke to Siobhan Long later about that, and in the sense that it would be a great thing if I could use it for something else, let's say, which was came up during the last few weeks with Mary Parkland, the visit to Galway and the travelling people there, and I decided that, yeah, maybe I could do something good with the trophy. I suppose to be a one-off beautiful sculpture of one's instrument. So I thought maybe hand it up for auction or something like that to create an educational fundraising foundation for the travelling people. And talking to the chairperson of the travelling committee in Galway, the second and third level education is where it seemingly needed more so, the funds.
Do you keep very much in touch, even though you are living over in the States now, with what's happening here in Ireland with regard to the travellers and the travellers' movement?
It's hard to know what to think. I mean, if it wasn't for the fact that I mixed with the travellers and was brought up with the travellers for many years and born into them and being a half traveller myself, I suppose I would have a very different idea or impression of what's going on from what I read. And most recently with the traveller in the States who was caught on camera, on video camera, beating her child in the back of the car, a three-year-old, which obviously is nobody wants to see that. And as horrid as it is, but I was shocked to see that the travellers in Georgia, which is, I don't know how far, about maybe as far as halfway from between here and the States, from where she actually came from, which was Texas. It's another country altogether, it seems, even in the States itself, by times. But to see that the travellers in Murphyville, hundreds and hundreds of miles away in another state, had to answer for her, you know, for her.
They were being made to feel responsible for what somebody hundreds of miles away had done.
Yeah, and you're looking at, say, something happens in England and the Irish are blamed for it, or something happens in one state in America and another state is held responsible for it. I find it ridiculous how they treat minorities, and I find it ridiculous to think that if one person stands out of line, they should be dealt with and not, you know, condemn the whole community or communities around for thousands of miles around. That's ridiculous.
How aware were you when you were growing up of the richness of the traveller tradition in relation to music particularly, I suppose, because that's how you've expressed it yourself, if you like?
I suppose in the first 5 years I had no choice really, only lived the travelling life. But when I reached age of reason, when we moved into a house and when I started going to school and mixing with settled people and how my father was with somewhat in a catch-22 situation with the travelling world and the settled world and his children going into the settled world and being actually scared or worried about how his children would be seen or treated if they were seen as travelling people, you know, in the school. I mean, I went to school first. When I went to school, I believed that it was, education. Actually, in the very beginning, it was frightening because I was dropped in to the convent in Ballyfermot and the nuns. And that was really frightening. I didn't want to leave my mother, of course. I was 5 years old, and those nuns were standing there looking down at me, serious as hell, and I dropped my milk bottle and smashed it on the floor, and that didn't go down too well either. So it was pretty scary. And I remember my first punishment there was being put into a classroom full of a girls' classroom for probably talking at school or something like that. But anyway, after then, and I think there was a new school being built in Ballyfermot, and I went to this old Victorian house. And even in there, we had those teachers who were seemed to get some kind of sadistic pleasure out of beating kids. It was horrid. and didn't attend school as much as I should have, and left school at a very early age at 14. So back then, I think mostly in the houses, you know, where I lived in Ballyfermot and stuff like that, suddenly they had travellers move in, and they did treat them differently. We were treated differently, and we had to pay for it a lot of the time through embarrassing situations, anything as far as even protecting yourself physically. So that was pretty rough at the time.
Did music help?
I suppose it did later. My father started giving us music at a very early age, my brother and my sister. And then my brother taught me the whistle, Johnny. I was about seven or eight then. And then at the age of 10, I was found messing about with my dad's pipes, and whatever I was doing, it must have sounded okay to him, so he decided this is the piper. And of course there was a lot more attention paid to me, and I was held in a lot more and given a lot more practice, and he wanted to make something special of me, as he thought, and so I was the one that saw less of the movies and the outings and all that sort of thing.
So I presume there was never any discussion or argument then but that you were going to become a full-time professional musician.
It's all he had. Mm. I mean, it's all my dad had to give us. He was a traveller. He didn't have only very little education. And no matter what education he had at the time, moving into a house as a paddy traveller or whatever the settled people called him at the time, that's what he was, no matter what, as I said, education or what his background was, because he had horses and carts and he came from the road. So the only thing he did have to give us was the music, and he did say that to me at a very young age. You know, it's all I've got to give you is music, but it will break all language barriers and you'll never starve, you know. You'll always make enough to survive, and that was fine. But then he went on, since we moved into the house, the Furies lived down the road, Ted Fury and his sons, and there was somewhat, I think, I suppose there was competition between the two fathers, you know, who would have the better musically educated sons, mm-hmm. and all that sort of thing. And in actual fact, Finbar ended up living with us for a while, and we played together, not a whole lot together. My dad tutored Finbar and myself sort of separately. And then, at the time, I was 14 years old then, 13 or 14, and I honestly thought, because I hadn't played out, I honestly thought that I had this, because I'm a traveller, I might have this weird type of music that if I went out to play it outside, the people might not want to hear it at all, you know. And you turned the radio on, it was the Beatles, it was the Stones.
Sure, yeah.
At the time, the Beatles and Dylan, Donovan, whoever, and it was anything but Cayley House was the only place you'd hear Irish music, and that was banned. But after, I think it was at the age of 14, I played my first concert, and from there, it seemed like, you know, there's something in this. I played a bit from there until I was 18, 17 or 18. I did many other things. I worked as a labourer. And
then, of course, there was the Bothy Band.
That came about in the 70s, 74, 75. I was after doing a solo album with my brothers and Paddy Flacken. And actually, Tony McMahon had asked me to join a band back in 71, and that was something to do with 1691, I think, that was the band. And I remember going over to England, or to France, sorry, to Brittany in France, with Liam Weldon. And I remember that very well, because we didn't have a fare, you know, we didn't have a taxi fare or train fare, and someone was supposed to pick us up, and we hitchhiked. I think it was 200 miles or something like that, 100 and something. It seemed like 1,000 miles.
Mm.
We couldn't get a lift even after having... We sat down on the side of the road. It was Liam's idea that I'd take the pipes out and he'd take the Bowron. And he wrote on the Bowron, "Brest, please." That was the name of the place we were going to in Brittany. And eventually we got... I remember eventually we got this car stopped. It had passed Liam and it stopped where I was at. I was ahead of Liam. I was 24. Liam was a little older, and I think he had a problem with his knees at the time. But the car stopped, and I'm waiting. I'm trying to get the driver to wait for my friend Liam, and Liam is hobbling across the street, and he looks drunk. He's not. It's his knees. He had already thrown away one suitcase. He couldn't carry it. He was so bad. And I'm looking back at Liam, and he's doing his best, running at his best, which was, as I said, barely. His knees were knocking, all that sort of thing. And the next thing I saw, this other person come out. It was a cop, and went over to Liam, helped him across the road and took him into the cop station. So I had to go back, let the lift go, and we spent the night in the cop house, the two of us, in the cop's house, you know, checking out our passports and whatever else. We spent the night there drinking cider and Liam singing songs, and the cop just wanted us to stay, so we put us up at the cop house.
But he ended up having a good time anyway.
Yeah, it took us 2 or 3 days to get depressed anyway.
You spent a couple of years with the Bossy Band, and it was high-powered stuff, and it was touring and on the road and all that sort of thing. Mm. Since then, you haven't become involved with other bands.
No.
Is that because of the experience of what you learned from your time with the Bossy Band?
It's probably a combination of things. With the Bossy Band, after that 1691 thing, that's why I went over there, was to take the place of Peter Brown for a couple of gigs. I didn't. I went off touring then with Micheál and McCanley, and I think that would have been near enough the start of the getting together of the Bossy Band, because when I came back to Ireland, Micheál and myself played a little still, and then Trina and Paddy Blacken, and we played a few gigs, and Tony McMahon was with us on those gigs, and it was Tony's idea then to put us together for some program he was putting together on something to do with Napoleon, and from there, I think I'd say the Bossy Band sort of came about from there. And after the Bossy Band, I remember I was always looking for something different, asking for something different, you know, something new, and we even went as far as brass sections and all kinds of stuff with the band. And I thought with Trina, Micheál and Donal, three university taught people, and Matt and myself and Tommy, with the music and lyrics, we should be able to do something original. And we had many discussions on that and many talks about it, but nothing seemed to come of it. And then the band walked away from each other. It was supposed to be a resting period, and it ended up being a 25 or whatever it is year resting period. But I remember in 1980, 79 or 80, Donal and Christy came to my house in Clontarf, and the words from Donal was, "We've got what you've always been looking for. We've got that. We've got the saxophone. We've got electric guitars. We've got Bill Whelan on the piano. We've got this and we've got that, and Christy, and I think you should come in and have a listen, and maybe, you know, we can get the pipes in with that." So
that was the movie.
That was
the beginning,
Moving
Heart,
yeah,
presumably.
And
I went in to
see about, you know, to have a listen, and it was Baggot Street, Dublin, there, the Baggot Inn, and I actually played a few nights support them, and, you know, ended up joining in and stuff, but I wasn't about to go another 3 or 4 years or 5 years with a band that I thought, you know, I was just married and I had a kid, and I thought, maybe, you know, it's the same thing 5 years down the road, I'm skint, and I'll be playing for the bank, and, you know, I don't want to get into a mess for it, and I'd try something else, whatever. So I moved to West Cork, and from there, went into the antique business, and then got back with my family, and tried out again, you know, from away from the music altogether, gave up the music for a while again, and
is it like a bit of a drug, though, that you have to go back to?
It is in a way, but, you know, if it had stayed the way it was, say, in the 80s for me, and actually into the early 90s, 91, 92, if it had stayed that way for me, it would have been a drug that would have killed me. I didn't, you know, see it at the time, mostly, mm-hmm. but I believe now, looking back at it, that, you know, music can take you one way or the other. And I'm not just talking about music, I suppose all forms of work and art are the same. But particularly music, because at the time in the 70s, if you didn't drink, you were an oddball. And between drink, drugs and whatever else, mostly drink in the traditional world, although there were some traditional bands who drugged it more than any rock band, you know. But having said that, you know, looking back at it now, I think if I had stayed that way, I don't think I'd be alive today, you know. I wouldn't have lasted past, I'd say, 95 if I'd stayed that way, you know, so...
So when did you make the decision to move to the States?
Oh, 91. I had a shop in Clonakilty, and myself and my wife, we split up, and I decided I'd go to... I got a tour of the States for 3 months, and I went to do that, and hadn't been to the States for quite a while. So I ended up doing this 3 month tour, and as I was finishing the tour, I was getting callbacks to the gigs that I'd just done in the beginning, and I thought, wow, this doesn't happen in Ireland. Of course, they were well organized, and I was okay with them. I kept myself together for them and stuff, and I went back and I did a couple of the gigs, and I stayed for 6 months. And During the time I was there, someone convinced me to get a few of those application forms for the lottery
visa.
Citizenship card, alien card, or alien citizenship, or what it's called. And I sent in about 30 of those, and a couple of them were handwritten, which most people just stamped them, you know, with the address, the stickers. And I got a reply from them, which meant that I got the green card. And there were people in New York who'd been there for years of successful businesses, and they were pissed off at me because I was throwing my green card on the table as if it didn't, you know, matter whether I got it or not. And they'd been paying thousands of pounds or dollars to the lawyers to make sure they'd get it, you know. They're told they'd have more chance of getting it by paying for a lawyer. Some of them didn't, actually, but I got it, and I was kind of scared of it, because I thought, look, I've to live for 4 years in America before I can apply for citizenship, and that's the only way that I'm going to make this work, you know, that I can leave America and I don't have to stay there for the rest of my life. I'm there 10 years. I come back maybe 3, 4, 5 times a year to Europe, Ireland, and it's fine so far. But if I ever got into a situation where I couldn't come back because of the green cards or whatever, just permits and stuff like that, I'd hate that. I just have to leave it. And there are people there in that situation that I can't get back.
Presumably, it's a lot easier to make a living out of music over there.
And I'd say that's why people stay. Mm. I mean, otherwise, they'd come back home if it wasn't. It's cheaper. It's easier. There's lots more of it. And the country is so big. You could be traveling for a couple of lifetimes over there. And, you know, you can just keep going around in a circuit. And it's big enough to take that. Whereas in Ireland, you do one tour and you'd have to wait a year.
Wait a year or more before you can go again. Yeah. What about the pipes? What about physically keeping the pipes and maintaining the pipes and that over there? Is that any more difficult?
I think the fact that I make my reeds, it is a little easier for me. But even at that, there is a huge change. There's a huge difference between Boston, say, and the worst, actually, is Colorado. I played a festival in Colorado. It's the Telluride Festival, and it's one of the biggest bluegrass festivals in possibly in the world. But it's right up in the Rockies, and I'm up there. They even had, I remember, what's her name, Bonnie Raitt, going out, and three or four of them having a suck of the oxygen, because there's oxygen tanks behind the backstage where there is very thin, the oxygen is very thin, very, very dry. And I had the new pipes with me, and the ivory was cracking, and the reeds were closing up. And so I threw a sponge into the bellows, and I was literally pumping moisture from the bellows into the reeds. And it went. I got to the concert. I remember there was a review later, and this guy was going through the names, and it came. And Englishman Paddy Keenan was whatever to the band. You know, it's difficult from state to state. Mm. Dryness and heat will get them, and there's a lot of, as you know, in the States, conditioning. So you have, I mean, they can't even wait for the weather to change. There's a time clock, you know, where the cool air kicks in, and there's a time clock where the heat kicks in. You never know how it's like outside, you know.
How much do you get to hear young pipers nowadays, and what's happening generally in the world of piping?
There seems to be, I don't know, young musicians. There's so many of them, and they're so good. It's hard to say. I'm not living here, but what I hear from, you know, over there, I hear CDs, I hear tapes, and it's so easier, much easier now for younger people or musicians in general to put their own stuff together and release it themselves. And thankfully, the record companies are actually suffering, but at least they're becoming distributors as opposed to decision makers.
Mm.
But that's good for the self-produced piece. Anyway, I hear a lot of stuff, and there's so many of the young pipers today, speaking just generally, just specifically pipes. There's a couple of them, a few of them, they're unbelievable, young lads. And, I mean, only recently I heard an album of Killian Dallaly and his brother Niall.
Mm.
And then there was that's brilliant, really nice album. Oliver O'Connell's son, in actual fact, I'm driving Oliver's son's car. I borrowed his car. He's a lovely piper, Michael. But then it's the mood, you know. You get young people who are playing, and their technique is brilliant. And I mean, I was bad at that once, like flying along, top speed, technical, beating everybody. Nobody can do this. You know, this is the best. It's not the way, you know.
Is there too much of that going on nowadays, do you think?
There's a lot of it, but you know, people will condemn it and stuff. I wouldn't. I think it's great that the kids do it, because it's a great exercise for when they settle down and develop a mature mood of their own. And to express that, they're going to need all that technique, and they're going to need all that practice and exercise. So hopefully,
so it'll stand to them, whatever they decide to do with the music when they get a little bit older and a little bit more sense. What are your, just a final question for you, Paddy, about the future? What have you plans for the future? The things that you would particularly like to do? And I suppose this award is going to open some doors for you as well, hopefully.
Probably will. You know, I think it might help sell a few CDs, and I can manage to pay for the house that I'm trying to get down the country here. And I'd like to get a place back here and settle in. And I honestly don't, and never did really have a great grow for going on stage in front of people and playing for money and stuff. I'd rather be, you know, playing for myself and having fun with, have it as a hobby of some kind. But then there's the, what else do you do if you spent a whole lifetime at it? There are other things I could do, and I could use the music as a sideline and, you know, record and experiment with it and sell the CDs and teach and stuff like that, which is what I'd like to do in the future. But right now, it's just what I'm doing is recording, playing clubs, pubs, not so much pubs, but clubs and theatres and festivals and coffee houses in the States and Europe. But I would like to get to where I would, you know, could have some kind of a setup where I would be teaching and possibly even making, I don't know about the making of the pipes, but teaching and experimenting with the pipes and music and recording that. I'll never stop playing music. I mean, I have saxophone, I have accordions, I have guitar, banjo, I play all those instruments, so I don't get bored with the pipes. But the only instrument I play out is the pipes.
Is that going to change ever? I mean, will we ever see you with the saxophone in your hand on stage?
I would hope to see that. I would hope to, because I'm getting more into composing stuff. And I'm not saying that I'm a composer by any means. I'm sort of experimenting with that too. It's not, you know, I haven't fully developed where it's, hopefully it will get much better. But I would like to compose enough music, say, to put on a CD and stand beside it and say, I'm happy with that. You know, I'm really happy with that. That hasn't happened with anything I've done so far, musically, on record, that is. And I have some stuff from concerts and gigs that I listen to at home. Sometimes I'll pick it up and listen to it. There's hundreds of them there. And I much, much prefer that, and some of that, than I do of any of the albums I've done. So obviously, I haven't really captured the mood as it's supposed to be. For example, Johnny's tune and the tune from my mother on those albums, they were composed and they were recorded without being played enough. And now I play them and they're totally different. There's much more of the story, there's much more soul and whatever else in there, and less clustered and stuff. So hopefully sometime I get a chance to do them as I believe they should be, you know. But until then, people are just going to have to listen to what's there.
Well, listen, congratulations once again, and it's a great achievement. And enjoy the night in Cork.
I will indeed. I will very much so. And I just like to thank the people who, I don't know how this works, but whoever it is that voted me in, and thanks to Mary Parkland and to yourself and to all the good people who are helping me with it. Thank you very much.
examples there of Paddy Keenan's composition skills. The first of those two, the first two of those reels, and Tara, and the twirly haired girl, and finally the traditional reel, which was a great favourite of his father's, by all accounts, the Mountain Road, and that was Paddy Keenan there from the album The Long Grazing Acre with Tommy O'Sullivan and friends. That concert takes place in the Cork Opera House next Saturday night, tomorrow week, the 16th of November. Paddy Keenan, of course, the guest of honour there. He will be presented with his award, Grabham Cule T.G. Carr. Liam O'Connor, who's the Young Musician of the Year. Peter Horan, who will receive the Hall of Fame. Composer Brendan Toner and traditional singer Len Graham will all also be present as well to receive their awards. And there'll be former members of the Botley Band. Beg Innish will be there, the Kilfenora Cayley Band, Nullig Ní Chathaoirseach and Artie McGlynn, John Carty, P.J. Kernan and many, many more. And that's in the Cork Opera House Saturday night, the 16th of November. That's part of the Arts Festival being organised all next week by the Cork Institute of Technology. Before we leave the subject of Illan piping, to remind you that the 9th William Kennedy International Festival of Piping, organised by the Armagh Pipers Club, takes place in and around the city of Armagh, starting this Sunday and continuing until the 18th of November. Lunasa are in concert in the Armagh City Hotel on this Sunday night. Lots of events taking place, lunchtime concerts and sessions throughout the week. There's a Young Pipers concert which takes place in the Garage Theatre in Monaghan on Wednesday night, and the same concert then takes place in the Navan Centre on Thursday night. Next Friday night in the Armagh City Hotel, a concert with the MacDonald Brothers from Scotland, Alan, Ian and Angus, the Pipers, and the band Ndorsa. And then on Saturday, the 16th of November, there are classes and workshops for Illan Pipes and for the Scottish Highland and Small Pipes, and also for reed making with Dave Williams. And that they take place from 10 o'clock in the morning until half past four on Saturday. And then the piping concert in the Armagh City Hotel on Saturday night, featuring Liam O'Flynn, Robert Watt, Neely Mulligan, Stefan and Jan Kermabon from Brittany, the MacDonald Brothers from Scotland, Tiernan O'Binchin and Michael McGoldrick. And then the exclusively Illan Pipe concert takes place on the last night of the festival, Sunday the 17th of November. Again, Liam O'Flynn, Neely Mulligan, Mike McGoldrick, Tiernan O'Binchin and members of the Armagh Pipers Club. It's the 9th William Kennedy International Festival of Piping in the city of Armagh. And I mentioned that Lunasa will be there for the opening night of that concert on Sunday night. Before that, tomorrow night, you can see them in the Cultverlin in Belfast, and then Lunasa continue their short Irish tour with a concert on next Monday night in the Linenhall Arts Centre in Castlebar. And Wednesday and Thursday of this coming week, the 13th and 14th of November, they're in Whelan's in Wexford Street. Tony McMahon and Steve Cooney are in Hoolness Mare in County Waterford. That's organised by Craig McGumrough of Coltis Kilporeairn, and that's tomorrow night at 8:30. The Cork Singers Club welcome back Sean O'Shea. That's on Sunday night at 9:15 in the Spalpeen Fáinne in Cork City. And finally, also in Cork City next Saturday, as a part also of the Arts Festival of Cork in the Cork Institute of Technology, at the Half Moon Performance Space in the Opera House, throughout the day on Saturday, the Trad Day Out is presented by the T.G. Cahir programme Flusk. At 2:30, Emer Mayock and Donal Siggins will be in concert. At 3:30, Mairead and Trina McGonagall with Neil Martin. And at 4:30, Zoe Conway with Finan de Barra and Robbie Harris. Tahi O'Shea is Farah T there for the day. Lovely afternoon of music. Free concerts. Admission is free. It's in the Half Moon Performance Space in the Opera House in Cork City next Saturday, tomorrow week, the 16th of November. And finally, just to let you know, a date for the diary on Saturday, the 23rd of November, tin whistle and flute classes and a recital take place in the Ulster Folk and Transport Museum. That's in Coolthraw in Hollywood in County Down with Paul and Maureen McGrattan. And if you're interested in that, you should get in contact with Maureen Page at the Ulster Folk and Transport Museum. And that takes place on Saturday, the 23rd of November. This is Fiddle Music from another new album from Jesse Smith. Thank you. And Lawson's favourite, Three Reels, from Jesse Smith on Fiddler. Jesse, originally from the United States, but he's been living in the west of Ireland for quite a number of years now. Was a member of the band Donu for a couple of years, and that's his first solo album. Three Reels there, with guitar accompaniment from John Blake.